A very good morning and welcome back to the show. We return now to the panel discussion I chaired on identity this weekend at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Who are you? Who am I? With award-winning poets and writers Daljit Nagra, Romesh Gunasekera, Yang Lian and John O'Sullivan. So John, as you've been travelling this past year, have you been painting as well as writing?
And doing lots of 30-second silent videos of places to go to and just trying to get them all together and confuse myself, which I do with consummate ease.
So much a part of identities is the environment that you're in, the location, the place, the sense of place, and that can influence you. So we'll come back and talk about that as well. But I'd like to move on and hear now from Daljit. Which poem are you going to read for us and this link to identity?
I thought I'd read a poem about shopping.
Okay.
Dubai seems like a fitting place to read a poem about shopping. I want to read this poem because it's about certain, Sikh Punjabis in Britain, particularly in the 80s, 90s, going back to India prior to a wedding because it's cheap to buy things there with the advent of the Russian, kind of cheap Russian flight. It's quite a quick thing to do, to go to Punjab for a few days, buy up loads of stuff for weddings, bring it straight back. Okay? So that was a kind of little identity that was created amongst my relatives. And I've just got an epigraph from Tamburlaine. Marlowe's Tamburlaine, and he says, "I mean to cut a channel that men might quickly sail to India." And I guess I had that colonial perspective in mind in this poem. Because I guess my mum, when she goes back to India, when she's been back to do this shopping thing, she takes on this kind of, you know, super status. I want to capture some of that. And it essentially, this is a girl going back to India to buy loads of things. So she's going back with her mum. So it's called For the Wealth of India. To Aeroflot, the savage miles in a moment, tucking under continents to clip the distance, zoomed to our ancestral homeland, so we ransack the bazaar tracks of back-alley bounteous Jalandhar, ranting down the market prices to a smudge paid by my permed auntie in Walsall, bombing through the brightly lit boutiques, mum beating a brow, stomping a finger, so a gold-toothed owner clicks to a knobbly knees, bent-neck man who trays us with milky sweets and cans of Fanta, who says, "God you bless, mem sahibs." Twisting away with a snarl, I see it, punting my heel up his arse, I scurry him off like a rat. From the stalls of the shop, posted with Madhu Dixit and Wham, we shoot through the glossy pages of the tea-stained catalogues for the blood sari to wow the guests into awe when I walk the aisle to the holy book of my biggest day. That's the style, mummy. I need it now, mummy. The ultimate design to highlight my super long legs. But the tailors scratch their necks, snort, reversing some phlegm until mum clears them with her finest English. "What is this corruption? We need it foot a foot. Or must we go to the clean-nosed Hindu with cut-cut scissors next door?" Daddy would applaud if he wasn't slogging at the concrete factory. The Pongi tailors run like flies now that time is against them as we debate with a queue of Englanders the top-carat beauty of exotic things and which riff-raff road in Southall we all left for Harrow. The local still looks from us for ages until mum blinks them with the sun off her gemmed Rolex. I wonder if mum's old family were trapped over here, too sweaty for style, with all the pig-sniffing sewers so heavy and holding. Oh well, what a shame. As we lap up our suits, shoes, and bags of bangles in cheapo knickers, tossing them at the slouch driver of the flimsy rickshaw to shout, "Jaldi, jaldi, back to Britain, get us out of here," spinning a penny to some limbless in a bucket. Thank you.
Thank you, Talbot. Thank you very much. such rich words there. Daljit, with growing up in Britain and born in Britain, I know that from the south and the north of Britain, and then you have the Punjab all mixed in there. And the conflict, did you face any conflict growing up in the UK? Did you, within your family, face conflict? And with, say, the white man on the street, did you face conflict?
Yeah, I think when you're growing up, you unconsciously go through the process of just absorbing the conflict and finding kind of instinctive reactions to it. So I grew up in a kind of completely white area. In the secondary school, there were 1,300 students, and I was one of three non-white kids from the area. And it was quite a rough white working class area. So there's inevitably conflict there. And at home, my parents are very traditional Sikhs. They expected my brother and myself to be very, very traditional Indians. And they couldn't understand what was going on in school, that we were becoming westernized and being into football and rock music. So, yeah, there were kind of multiple conflicts, I think, yeah.
And does that continue now as an adult? Are you still having those conflicts on a grown-up scale?
I think it's the effects of the conflict, yeah, with, you know, tensions with family. And also, you get better at dealing with those conflicts. And I kind of live in an area which is much more multicultural, where I feel comfortable. And that felt very important to me. Well, I've got a white part wife. Is white. And if I'd lived in a very Sikh area, I would have probably been made to look at myself and gaze at my kind of, you know, moving out of the white Indian community into this other community. So I've kind of made this decision to, you know, live in the appropriate areas to feel at one with myself.
Yeah, good. So you found an environment that you feel comfortable in, and clearly that comfort, you're able to write from that comfort. For some people, I don't know, for you, your best place to write when it comes to the environment that you want to be in, is it a place of comfort or is it somewhere you feel uncomfortable? Leanne?
Well, I have to say, we always both lose and gain, you know. The problem is, of course, China has a huge population, but literally, for the international world, it's still rather a small country. And how many people, how many Chinese writers you know? And if you not only ask the writers, but if you look at the writings, actually the Chinese, let's say contemporary Chinese, writings, except the poetry for the fiction or non-fictions, rather, I have to say, quite poor, you know, those autobiographical, memoir stuff, and directly linked with the subject of politics. That was, it seems, the only thing attract people. But where is the real fiction? Where is the real, you know, creative thinking? What is the deep understanding within the literature? That's a really big question. But then, when I start writing, at the beginning I was call myself a poet of China because I came out from there. But then when I travel in the world, I find, okay, actually what's interesting is my writing in Chinese. So I call myself a poet of Chinese language. But after all, I said, wait a second, it's not a common Chinese I use. I just using my own maybe weird Chinese. So like your Ponglish, I actually use the words for a long time, a Younglish, which is for Chinese audience, my poem is actually maybe even more strange than maybe international readers, their feeling, you know. So in that case, it's finally, I have to say, the rather weaker situation, but driven us to be in the deepest understanding, to force us question ourselves in deeply way, and therefore gain the kind of maybe extra energy of writing. And without it, we sunk into the ocean, but boring talk of identities, and because we never actually meet the question.
Don't really face that question deep within us.
So then I have to say, whatever my understanding about like China, or I want to see Ramesh when we did this great event in British Museum, I did carefully read your novel and especially checking his journey, you know, into the let's say, your back route, and then how to bring that experience into the writing in an individual way of thinking and writing. So, you know, that becoming a grammar, we understand each other.
A dialogue.
Yeah, and that's
Ramesh.
The situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I've got completely seduced by Yang Lian's words now. I've forgotten what your question
was.
Well,
no, but come back if you wish to what Lian's saying. But
you were asking about place as well, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and about the environment.
Well, I suppose when I started writing, I think being pragmatic more than anything else, I reckon that discomfort was useful for writing because it wasn't very easy to find comfort, physical comfort, as it were. Now that I'm older, I think I can write quite well in a nice 5-star hotel in a beautiful part of the world. And in a way, actually, you know, if you're writing where you are, doesn't really matter. Where you are physically matters for lots of other things. For a lot of writers, a lot of your writing life is, if you were going to rely on your writing, is going to be in poverty. So you probably need to be near a job if you want to survive, or near some very generous and rich friends or something like that.
But also so, the environment has influenced your writing. I mean, when you're writing of Sri Lanka and the...
Yes, but it's really, I mean, writing... I think for all of us, you know, whether it's poetry or fiction, it's an imaginative act. And what you need is imaginative space more than anything else. Now, lots of other things can stop you from having imaginative space, like being really, really tired or being really, really poor or being, you know, having a really, really hard time. It's difficult. But I kind of grew up with these ideas in my head, which may be right or wrong, but I always thought writing isn't going to be easy. I never thought there was any money in it. The kind of heroes I had, or the few that I knew about, were either romantic poets who died young, so there wasn't much future in it, or ones who worked really, really hard. You know, I used to read about, I don't know whether it's true or not, but, you know, William Faulkner getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and writing before he went off to do something else. So, I mean, that's the way I did try to, I never made 4 o'clock, but I made 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I used to write in cafes, write on the tube, write on buses, wherever I could. As you get older, you kind of try to get your better, so I kind of don't do it quite the same way. But the imaginative thing, Sri Lanka, you know, my first couple of books were set in Sri Lanka very much, but quite often in periods of Sri Lanka that I wasn't there, I had to imagine it. And I hope I kind of got it right.
It's beautiful and you're descriptive, and it's interesting. What fascinates me is that idea of your own sense of identity and how it is your imagination. You don't have to be in the place that you're writing about.